And they're going to be brief, but I won't take too much time. I just remember as a child listening outside the window and hearing a muffled sound when the snow was on the ground. And what it would be a horse pulling along a wooden snowplow, small wooden snowplow, either Franklin Wells or one of the men from the farm. It would be sitting in the center, this little A-frame type unit, and quietly but scuffling along the sidewalks would be this little plow on the log. And I can remember going to the Talbotville School, walking along, and in the fall of the year, and I'd love to be, it'd be a nice crisp morning, and I just look down, and maybe I'd find a horse chestnut or two, and open up the covers, and be nice, shiny horse chestnuts, and I'd stick in my pocket, and I thought, boy, what a treasure I have today. And, but they were so nice, unique. And then we get to the school, and I can remember Mrs. Lover, the teacher, and the one-room schoolhouse. And I can remember trying to concentrate, maybe on our work, and she was talking to another class, but all one big room. And, being three or four grades, I think three the time I was there, in one room, sometimes it's hard to concentrate on your particular level. But I remember going out in the spring, or probably around May, when they'd have, used probably a flagpole or something, set up a maypole, weave in between each other, and weave them some kind of colored threads of paper, and it was kind of pretty, see, this maypole. Then on Memorial Day. Memorial Day was always a special time in Talbotville. That's when we get together, and different friends and different people who live in the town, the village, would get together and form a parade, usually around the church, and we'd walk down through Main Street and up into the cemetery. And there'd be a band playing. I'm not sure if it was a small school band or where it was, where it came from, but I can remember going and listening and just take a little bouquet of flowers, a lot of the students and whatnot would carry those and put them on the soldiers' monument at the cemetery. Kind of unique experience. I can remember in the morning, too, sometimes on a Sunday, it'd be quiet, very quiet, and then suddenly you'd hear the tolling of the bell. It would sound like, come to church, come to church, come to church, and we'd ready to ring. And then sometimes, when I was younger, I remember being a scout, a Cub Scout in the basement of that church. And I can remember we had our uniforms on, and doing all kinds of project work, and I thought, boy, this is really great, making some headway. Then another interesting experience I remember as a child. One Christmas Eve, my parents took me down to the barn, down at the end of the Talbotville, and we just thought we'd experience something a little different, a little more unique. What it would have been like to be in a manger. If we went into the barn, just the cows munching on their hay and stomping occasionally in the stalls. And just very quiet and warm, kind of a different type of atmosphere. But what a unique experience, and our Lord can be born in a situation like that. It's quite humbling and interesting experience. But then I can remember fires. I hear the fire siren. And I still see a few people gathering, and they go to that, see the smoke up on the river tracks. And I thought, geez, what's going on up there? It's happened once in a while. And sure enough, a steam locomotive had gone through and probably dropped a spark. And there was a little bit of a grass fire. And so they'd get out there, the fellows would get out there with little Indian pumps and put out the fires. But for a while, they were spread quite a ways. And I thought, boy, it's going to take time. But they went right to town, took care of it. Same place at the railroad tracks, I can remember also as a child, taking little pennies and lining them up on the track, waiting for the steam locomotive to go through. And if it was on time, you'd see it thundering along, and the pennies are just gone. And then you'd have to hunt around for them, and you'd be flat as a pancake. But kind of unique, it was kind of something different too. Then I can remember the office clock. I remember my father occasionally going up, and it would be in the afternoon, usually sometime on Saturday possible, going up the windy steps of the old with the tower. You see dead bugs and a few cobwebs sweeping by. In my memory, I'd say, boy, this must be something like it would have been to climb the old North Church, to light the lanterns on the midnight rather taller here. But then, soon enough, we're at the top. We peek out, my father would help set the hands, and then I'd crank away. And lo and behold, out of the deep abyss, with these weights coming up and up, and finally reach the top, and be cranked enough. Then I can remember, also, my dad had a double rip made. That's a big sled out of wood, the runners in the front and the back. And in those days, they weren't as efficient, the town wasn't quite as efficient on plowing and sanding the roads quite as quickly. And it was good for younger people, usually young on the other part, and younger myself at that time. We pulled this sled all the way up Elm Hill Road, get it up to about where the spring houses are. And then we get on board, and I'd be on the very back. My father would get the front steering it, and maybe a few others, and I'd be push, and away we'd go all the way down. If we're lucky, we went right down by the mill. Hopefully stop before we get to 83. That was my experience. And Mr. Pitkin, who was a gentleman who lived right near Pitkin Street, on Pitkin Street, had an old Oldsmobile, and I remember him delivering eggs at the time of the falls above. And he would come with a basket of, or really a pail of eggs. I thought, boy, I don't know how this man must have 75 eggs in his pail. I'd carry him in without breaking an egg, and he'd grab about five at a time, carefully put them. And you'd be talking away, you'd be thinking about it, just taking all these eggs and piling them up on your, beside your sink or wherever you wanted to put, and never broke an egg. I thought, some eggs are smashed off eggs. I never saw it. Fishing was kind of an interesting thing. I used to take maybe a handmade or old fishing pole, and in the spring of the year, go down to the banks of the pond, and put some worms on the end of the hook and see how many, if I could get maybe one or two fish out of the tall little pond. It's kind of interesting. Usually got a few. And then if you looked across the west, you could sometimes in the afternoon see the sunset. It's kind of a unique experience. So I feel that we were very fortunate that those are some of the experiences. Others, there's plenty of them. I can tell you one other one about coal. I can remember when I was a child, I used to eat the coal. And the truck would come along, and first, like a scissors lift way up in the air, and finally dump. On top of that, the coal would go shooting down into the cellar, and dust coming out of there. Really, it was probably something. Then at night, I'd be lying in bed, I'd hear the thumping of the pipes. And somebody was stoking the fire and shaking the grates. Just one of those unique feelings. Those are just a few of the memories that I have of Talbotville. Hopefully, it will be a new sign coming up the end of Main Street to designate that sometime. We'll get permission to put it up. Probably by summer, hopefully, locate that. And I just want to say I appreciate Bill Byers' effort, Bob Byers' efforts to really work hard with Talbotville, and appreciate it being so unique and being kept that way. At this time, I'd like to just introduce my father, Joshua Talbot Jr., who came down today from Plymouth, Massachusetts, and share with you some history going further back than what I can remember.
Good afternoon to you all. I do want to, first of all, certainly give thanks to the Vernon Historical Society's committee for getting Talbotville to be recognized on the National Register. And so to you, thank you, certainly, Ms. Abbott and Mr. Hurd, for the work that you've done. And I think it's splendid to have that, and I'm very, very happy indeed that you were able to accomplish this and to have it done so promptly. I'm only going to speak a few moments because I know our main speakers to come, but it was my great-grandfather who was Horace Wells Talbot, who, along with Charles Dennison, were the two brothers who founded Talbotville in the, were there working in when it became established in 1856. I would like to tell a lot about, but I just won't have the time to, what I remember. But there are two, a sound and a sight that I think I should start with, and I want to mention to you. I think one of the sights that I perhaps, I think of particularly was when the mill not only opened in the morning, but as it closed in the afternoon, they rang a bell at the time for people to be there for a good 5 minutes. But then to see the people leaving the mill, you didn't see a lot of cars or a lot of people. It was just people walking out. Most of them lived right in the village. So they could walk to the mill and leave the mill and just walk. And so there were a few persons, and one in particular lived away. I finally lived in our tenement houses to begin with, but finally built the first house up the top of Elm Hill Road. And so they had a long walk, and usually they had a horse and a wagon, and you see them starting up, and I suppose it took them 10 or 20 minutes to get up there, but they had their own home, and they were one of the first ones up there. But other than that, everybody was simply walking to or from, because it was close by to the mill. Everything was so close by in the village that you could do that. You didn't have to have cars, didn't have to have even bicycles to go back and forth. Yeah, that was a sight. Then I think of the sound that I hear, and my son didn't mention that when we had the Memorial Day services, originally it was, we had it on a Sunday afternoon, was because we could have the talk of a 500 club, which was a considerable note in the day. There have been three of those. One of them early, that I, before my time, and then one that I remember during World War II, or World War I, because they had, I think, 20 members in the service. But it was an excellent drum corps, 500 drum corps, and then one that I even had the privilege of being in for a short time. It didn't last that long, and we talked about 500 drum corps. But that would lead the cemetery, a parade up to the cemetery. And I remember the second drum corps, the one that was in the time of World War I and thereafter, that they would practice, and I wished I could remember exactly whether it was Monday or Thursday night, but one of the two nights in Talca Hall, which was over the store. The store and post office, of course, were in the same place. The post office was in the center of the store, and the store was all around it. Upstairs to the hall, where it was Talca Hall, and that was where they would practice. But on good nights and in the summer, they would practice because they needed to march too. They had to appear and won a number of prizes in various fight and drum corps events. So they'd go out and march, and they'd march up as far as Dobsonville. And there wasn't much traffic in those days, certainly not too many automobiles. And so you'd hear them in the evening, and they'd be playing when it was already getting dusk. But you could hear the distance, the tune that they played, and they had an excellent repertoire. So I enjoyed hearing that when they would go out and march occasionally through the village street. That was the biggest organization we had there. I think I should mention some regrets that I have in regard to Talkerville that we didn't preserve. And one of them is the Four Chimney House. The Four Chimney House was down by the on the opposite side of the where there is the brick house now. It was a four chimney of brick. And when I was growing up, unfortunately, it wasn't in good enough shape, so that I remember my father had people living there that couldn't afford to pay rent anywhere, and so they just lived in the place. And it was the back part which had been wood, and that was pretty much what was used. But then it was just left that way. I mean, it got worse shape, and then I didn't know what to do. I thought, well, we ought to spend it to save it. But then it was an odd, it wasn't size really used for people in the mill. And but I should have preserved it, but then I left the village. And by that time, there was nobody living in it. We put signs up, and we put tried to put a fence so people wouldn't go in the door, barriers and so forth. So I thought it was reasonably safe. But a building inspector came along, who was appointed in town, who was not particularly helpful in that regard. In fact, he lived in Talkville. And he made it evident that we must have it down while we live in so many days. And I pleaded with him, said, well, we don't want to have it torn down. We'd like to eventually restore it or do something. But I didn't act quickly enough. And so he just went ahead, and I wish the this organization was in effect at that time, because I couldn't get any support to do anything to delay it. And I guess I was just too inactive at the moment, and the thing was torn down, and I'm sorry it was. But it was in such poor shape even from the earliest time I remember it, but it was the oldest. And being fortunately, it was a shame it wasn't. It was, in fact, the Walkerton house that he lived in. So I'm sorry that we didn't save some brick for that. The other thing was that the Talkett Library, it's a shame that had come out. It was built by the Talkett brothers in 1881, had the clock tower on it, and it was right in the center of the village, near the next to the church, or across from the church on Elm Hill Road. But unfortunately, when the mill fell, it became an office. The original office was in the church, under the church building that burned in 1906, and so they went over, took part of the library, and I think this library was very important in the early days because it was before Rockville had a library at first, and then when Rockville Library came along, it wasn't as important any longer for people. But the building could have been preserved, but they made fire regulations and such, and so the next thing I knew, that was torn down. I'm sorry to see about that. I'm sorry the Wool House by the railroad track, where people used to even live, and where the wool was stored, and which led up to the fire of that in later years. And I'm sorry that the railroad station of the Niagara Railroad was torn down, of course, or taken away by the railroad. If I'd been thinking about that, I guess we could have saved that, because I go out to places now, in Kansas and other places, you see this nice little railroad station still existing, no longer a train going by, but they've saved the station. Should have saved that one. It was a nice little station. I used to use it. I commuted to Hartford 2 years for school myself. So I'm familiar with the thing. We should have saved that. It's regrets. But there's some good things that happened. And that made it possible, I think, that you could even have the talk put on the National Register. One of them is that back in the 1920s, my father, John G. Talkett, and C. Dennison Talkett, kept the mill running in the 1920s when business was not good. They really should have shut the mill down. They're losing money. But they decided to run the mill 3 days a week. And they ran it 3 days a week, not just to save the business, because the business wasn't worth it to the mill, but to keep the employees so that they would have money coming in, so they would have wages. And because of that, we were able to carry it on. We did close down in the 1940s for good. But that was something. We were able to keep the mill from stopping as soon as many of the other mills terminated here in the Rockville area. And I remember I was, in those years, part of those years, I was at Deerfield Academy up in Deerfield, Massachusetts. And the headmaster, Mr. Boyden, said, he admired my father for keeping the mill running in those years when, of course, if we hadn't made a profit, we couldn't have done it, but we had made some profit before, so they were able to keep the mill running, and then gradually the business, some of it came back. But ultimately, we then finally, even if it was in the early 1940s, we had to close the mill altogether. But there was another point. We were able to keep the mill going longer, so the village was retained longer as a village, and then we decided we'd have to sell a mill. But no one wants a mill and all the property around it, these houses. You don't sell businesses now with, like you might have had it back in the 1800s. So the mill property, my father and I decided to keep, and kept it as John G. Talkett and his son, real estate. And what we did was the mill was closing, but we didn't open it to some others, but they hardly employed anybody. But we gave the chance. We continued to rent the houses at really just a very nominal sum. And then gradually they began to buy the houses. I gave them an opportunity, the occupants, first opportunity to buy the house in Talkville. And most of them are single houses, but there were some that were double. We were fortunate that we only had one house that had four families in it. Most of them were single residences. So people took the advantage to buy it, and I think that helped. Because people they were used to the way they were. They didn't immediately have somebody else come in and change the house all over. And so we've been able to keep it, and then gradually people bought the houses. Though if I kept them longer, We would make a lot more money as time went on. But the point was, we were doing it to try to keep the people there. And so that's one of the things that I'm thankful for, that we've been able to keep the village with as little change as possible, even up to the present day. And so I think that that part of the reason is the family did these things in the past, for which I am thankful. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Pocket, and thank you, John, for sharing your memories of Pocketville with us. That's one of the things.